There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
It's that familiar feeling. The smells, pads crashing, fans cheering, fight songs, chants and whistles fill the air. There's no doubt, football is back. If you want to make a name, better stand in the
river. Do not be afraid!
Champions have come from a select few. Will a new season bring new challengers?
He's never made a fair catch.
He didn't make a fair catch signal.
He's gone.
Familiar names, but new places. And chaos always finds its way back.
The Aggies win the game of the year.
Juggling catch made. Was it inbound for T. Higgins? Yes.
How did he haul that one in?
Tradition is back. Pride is back. Football is back.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Football is back in Clemson, South Carolina. You're taking a look at the Reeves Football Complex, where the Tigers have been scratching, clawing, and training for day one of the season so that they can rally the fans right here in Death Valley and open it up against an ACC rival, Georgia Tech. That's happening tonight at 8. What's happening right now on your screens is College Football Live. Welcome inside Death Valley. We're going 5 wide.
Let's go.
Okay,
right out the gate.
Can I lay out a disclaimer?
Go ahead.
Don't touch the desk.
My hands are right here the whole time.
If y'all see me on TV like this,
yeah.
It's because the desk is hot.
Right. It feels like a cast iron skillet right now. So my hands will be right here in my lap.
That's how we're going to open. The bases are going to wind the whole time. You're going to see us sweating. Our ACC brethren are here.
Let's go.
This is EJ Manuel, one of the most productive Florida State quarterbacks you've ever seen.
Oh,
how many wins? 25?
26?
26.
Well, who's counting?
Who's counting?
Bunch of championships.
Eric McLean, remember, he was an all ACC offensive lineman, a captain.
46 wins, so 20 more.
No, oh!
You have 4 years to start now. Hey, don't take it there now.
Start with you today, but it's all good.
Right. Those are just the usual suspects. We got Dave down there holding down the sport.
Yeah, just the Heisman Trophy winner.
Right.
I am just relishing the honor of being able to talk to somebody else other than Dave to start out the college football season. Guys, let's start our conversation right here with Clemson, and I'm guessing everything has to start with Trevor Lawrence, the true freshman that took over midseason and won a national championship for the Tigers. And Eric, we'll start with you. We'll talk your alma mater and kind of the expectations that you have for the sophomore, what improvements and changes he's going to make in year
two. I think they're very lofty expectations. I think when you see what the kid did with a little bit of half playing time in those first couple of games and then what he was able to do when it was his shift, it was truly amazing. And to see him go against Notre Dame, Alabama, some of the best defenses he went against, he only played better. So I think as the lights got brighter, he played better. Excited to see what he does year two.
This is Tua-esque for me from a year ago. I mean, I came into the season last year and I expected huge things from Tua. I come into this season, I expect huge things. I expect better play than you saw a year ago. I expect this offense to be unstoppable. I expect this offensive numbers to points per game to go up by at least a touchdown. Yeah. I mean, he's that kind of good. I have never seen a kid come in as a true freshman, Dez, that I said he would have been the number one overall pick in the draft last year. That he would have been. And he's back, obviously, for at least 2 more years. That's how good this kid was.
I tell you what, I think that Trevor Lawrence is going to have a monster season. I think he's going to put up some big numbers. But I think when he plays against some of the elite defenses, I believe that he will struggle. You say it's 2-esque. So you think about Tua a year ago.
Yeah.
We all thought this kid was going to come here and win the Heisman after that national championship game against Georgia, right? You give Georgia time to study this kid, get some film on him. He didn't look as sharp when they played him again. You give Clemson and Brent Venables some time to study this kid, get some film. He didn't look sharp in that championship game. I think that against elite defenses, great defenses, Trevor Lawrence may struggle some this year because now you have footage to study of this kid, and everybody, I don't care who they are, everybody got weaknesses.
Yeah. You know what stinks about that is that might be the playoffs if we first see that.
I digress.
Hey, the only guy,
you don't want it to happen there. That's the
right?
You saw it, right?
Right.
You want that to happen there.
The only guy that's played in the ACC at quarterback is this guy.
I was going to say the biggest thing for him in year two is don't try to do too much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Be who you are. You have a great supporting cast around you. You got a bunch of first-round picks at receiver. You got a first-round pick at running back. You got a great O-line. You got an awesome defense. You got a heck of a head coach. So, to me, I mean, he just doesn't need to do too much. Just be yourself. Be Trevor Lawrence. And don't fall into all the hype, because that's our job to talk about him, but he doesn't need to focus on that at all.
Okay, you're missing some of the supporting cast and their supporting preseason All-Americans. We're talking about T. Higgins. We're talking about Justin Ross. Well, Travis
Etienne. We got some ballers around him, so, I mean,
exactly.
Just do your thing.
So who are those guys that, I mean, Travis Etienne in his third year, I believe he's one of those guys that could break every rushing record if that's what he chose to do in any given season.
I mean, Travis is a guy who I think, you know, he could be a Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah.
Only problem is he's on the same squad as Trevor Lawrence.
Right.
So they're going to split votes. But, I mean, you know, for a guy who's 5'10", about 200 pounds, he runs with a lot of power. He's fast.
Sneaky
he's quick.
Power.
Exactly. So I love what he brings to the offense. And he's a guy who can get out there on the perimeter, make you miss. But he's actually effective in between the tackles, too. He can do a little wildcat. Etienne can do it all.
I think the biggest thing this year, again, and we said that we talked about this on the huddle, E, is seeing how they use him in the pass game. You know, we heard some quotes from camp. Trevor and him working after practice on his routes, on his hands. If he can do that, I mean, he's going to be a top draft pick at running back, if not the top draft pick. And just imagine how special that's going to make him in the college game.
I'm going to make you smile. How about Jackson Carmen?
Yeah. That was my play. You stole my player. Now I can't talk about it. Go ahead.
Just talk about
it. This is a surprise. This is a surprise.
I got one name right now.
Keep going. Keep going. Right. I got one note, and you just stole it from me.
I love it. Mitch Hyatt, a four-year starter at left tackle. You know, now you're coming in there with a new guy, a new face. So, that's a guy that is going to be a surprise. And can he hold up? The offensive line last year for Clemson was very underrated.
Yeah.
And do those guys up front protect them and create holes like they did a year ago? Because, I mean, it was holes, palooza, and it was protection. It was great protection. So it was those guys up front are going to play a big part.
Yeah, I think no doubt. They lost their center, a guy who started a bunch of years. But bringing a guy in from right tackle, he played a little guard last year, now moving him to center just because he's the best communicator, going and seeing practice. He was efficient. So I think it's going to be fun to see.
Efficient.
Yeah.
Efficient.
Another way. That's a good word.
He's okay. He's solid.
Well, I would say this just to add. I want to see a level of growth as far as picking up protections and picking up blitzes. That was one thing that I noticed that Trevor needed to get better. And naturally, all young quarterbacks, you struggle at it. You think you can throw hot. You think you can throw it to your back in the flat. And sometimes that's a viable option. But a lot of times, you could change that protection. You could solid that thing up. Like you said, a first round or overall first pick, that's going to solidify it even more for himself.
I get it. And I love the fact that you guys all want to talk offense. But can we talk the fact that the Power Rangers are gone?
That's
five of your top six sacks.
We got to stick to script, okay? I was trying to talk defense. You know how Xavier Thomas.
I mean, I know it's a lot of offensive players up here, but we can still talk defense, David. Breakout stars that you see on that side.
Xavier Thomas, number three on the edge. Last year you saw flashes from him. He was a true freshman a year ago. You can see it. He's the next freak up, because that's all that guy is freak. Now, listen, they're not going to be as deep, but he's a guy that quick, set the edge and run. You don't worry about run, but you also saw some good rushing. The quarterback, impressing the quarterback. No Farrell, no Lawrence, no
Austin
Wilkins.
Austin Bryant,
all those guys gone. You're going to have to find somebody to get to the quarterback.
And you know who that's going to be is this true freshman, already listed as an or starter, so that's a big thing when you're already that number one option. Tyler Davis, number 13. Y'all don't know about him yet. I do, because obviously I went here. It's going to be an absolute monster. Excited to see him tonight. They call him Baby Dex.
Ooh,
and
baby
there's
Dex.
A reason
high
for
praise.
That.
High
Dabo
praise.
Doesn't just dish out those compliments.
What does he high bring praise. To the defense? What type of player is he?
I think he's going to be exactly like Dexter Lawrence.
Like Dexter.
He's a whole fielder. He's a guy
that's
that can
praise.
Get after the quarterback.
Yeah.
Obviously not as big. He's not 6'6", 350.
Exactly.
But he's a smaller version that really is going to get after that.
But
that's what they need.
And he's new, but Xavier Thomas and all these guys that were filling in, by the way, they were back ups playing supporting roles.
Exactly. Yeah.
So now those guys are the main guys playing all the snaps.
Yep.
So now it goes behind them too. And the depth that they have to build throughout the season and grow, because that's going to be an important part of winning a championship.
Yeah, look, you supported, you got the ring, but now you get to put your stamp on a team.
Exactly.
And that's the difference that they'll be able to make. Listen, we have had so much fun following Dabo, the Clemson Tigers, during the offseason. All the fans that come in here, I'm telling you one thing that they're going to be, and that's all in.
Yeah. The goal is to be 100%.
no shine without the grind. That's what we always say. You got to put the work in, man. And that's a mindset. That's a mentality. You know, it's okay to live modern. We need to train over.
People talk about we bring momentum over. Or how do we ride this streak? We don't. Clean slate. You press the reset button.
Let's go! Here we go, baby. Let's go!
This team, they hadn't won a game. Show up, accept the challenge. Let's go to work.
Mind over matter, right?
All in on three. 1, 2, 3.
Here we go.
It's mind over matter until you actually got to go out there in that heat and hit those pads. I'm telling you, Clemson is all in. The Clemson football family. Okay, it's a four-part series, and you can watch that on the ACC Network. And we're here at Clemson, South Carolina, because the defending national champion, Clemson Tigers, they're going to kick off their season ranked number one against Georgia Tech tonight at 8 p.m. in Death Valley. You can only watch it on the ACC Network. And if you don't have it, visit getaccn.com to check your providers in your area. And if you don't see your provider listed, contact them to demand that they carry ACC Network. All right, some news from around the ACC. Remember, Florida State is supposed to kick off the season against Boise State in Jacksonville. That game has been relocated to Tallahassee due to the fact that Hurricane Dorian is expected to crash into the east coast of Florida. Now, the game was originally slated to kick at 7 p.m. Now that time has been moved up to 12, and Boise State will be on the road in Tallahassee. So here we are inside Clemson, South Carolina, Death Valley. It's the home of the Tigers. They're defending national champion. And let's just have a comment first about Florida State and having to move the game. There's a lot that kind of goes into that, a relocation. Sure. But what effects could that have on the team if they're looking to start the season?
Yeah, well, I think the main thing, Coach Tiger's going to make sure those guys are still preparing like they would if the game was still in Jacksonville. You know, obviously a location change isn't the end of the world. It is somewhat of a, you know, logistical thing to fix and to think about. But, I mean, you still got to get prepared for this football game. Now, I don't know. I'm not a meteorologist, so I don't know the forecast for Saturday. But
did you stay at the Holiday Inn Express last night?
I didn't. But nonetheless, shout out to Hilton. But I would say those guys have got to be prepared to go out there and play. I mean, This is still going to be a huge game for them. It's a huge moment. Yeah. And obviously, if they get a chance to play in Tallahassee, that home crowd should be right there. And
I mean,
it's a better thing for Florida State.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah. For the Seminoles. I don't think it's a big deal for Boise State because they had to travel to Florida
either way. Right.
Jacksonville, Tallahassee. What difference does it make for those guys?
Yep.
8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 12 o'clock. I think they're probably preferring earlier kickoff anyway. So I think it's a win-win situation for both teams.
I mean, it's part of it that you have to deal with, and they got to deal with that. But I tell you what, Florida State better start winning.
Yeah.
The Willie Taggart era last year was not pretty.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to watch this team. They're not starting with some of these teams across the country that are really easy that
Boise's
just get to break
team,
yourself.
You take
Boise's, Boise's going to make
Boise's
you earn it. So Justin Blackman named the starter for this season. That offensive line. Offensive line. Yeah. Guru.
You heard my feelings.
Have you been watching that offensive line the last several years?
It's a lot of question marks and a lot of confusing looks when I see the screen. And if I was Boise, I'm bringing all kinds of exotic blitzes. I'm bringing the house just to confuse those guys because you speed everything up.
Yep.
Now, if I was Florida State, I'd do the exact same thing because Boise's starting a true freshman.
Exactly.
All right, well, Florida State fans, $10 tickets at the door if you decide to show up.
There you go.
Please.
I love it.
Gamble.
Got to show up.
Let's go.
He's back in a packed house.
There you go. Game moved up to noon against Boise State. All right, coming up on College Football Live, are the Aggies all in? They'll be all in Death Valley in week two, so we're going to talk them next.
Welcome back to College Football Live.
There is nothing holy about the football war between BYU and Utah. They play at altitude and with attitude. They play to light the U on Mount Bancott, ring the victory bell at the Y. They play as if the final score will honor them.
I'm lucky enough to be one of the many players that actually has never lost to these.
Or haunt them. There is no in-between. This is their Iron Bowl, their Army-Navy, their Red River rivalry. They are separated by 46 miles alongside the Wasatch Range. They are divided by allegiances, but they are brought together by a game, by common disdain, and by a grudging respect. So wrap the campus statues in plastic, tell the Mormon Tabernacle Choir to cover its ears, instruct the children to look away. The why? The you. The Holy War.
So good to hear Gino's voice in our ears. Can't wait to get our buddy back. The Holy War. How about this? For the first time ever in the history of the Holy War, it's the 100th meeting, but the first time they start the season off against each other. Utah and BYU. They meet at 10:15 Eastern. It's going to be a late kickoff, but it's going to be a rivalry for sure. And Utah's got a lot riding on this season. Yep. They open up as the 14th best team in the nation. That's their highest ranking to start a season.
Yeah, and I've seen people put them in the college football playoff, and I think they're very much going to be a contender for that. And I'm very interested to see. This is not only bad blood, which Gino pointed out accurately. These are adults. Yeah, like, yeah. There's a lot of big, grown men that want to be physical. And BYU will be interesting because they're breaking in an offensive line that's new with a bunch of weapons. Huntley at quarterback comes back healthy from the collarbone. Moss, a dynamic running back. This season, to me, starts with Utah. Yeah. Is Utah going to be a championship caliber team? Are they going to be that good offensively tonight? Yeah. Is what I really want to see from them.
No, that's the big question mark is Utah. Everyone's talking about them this preseason, how they're going to be a team that can potentially win the Pac-12 and then Pac-10 and probably get into the college football playoff. I think BYU is kind of tired of hearing all that. You know, you're talking about passion, hate. This rivalry right now, in my opinion, is as big as Ohio State, Michigan, Georgia, Florida. Just a lot of people aren't aware of it because it's so far out west. I can't wait to watch this game tonight. I'm excited about it.
You're going to stay up late, Des.
Yeah, man.
You ready to stay up late for that? Utah, they're looking to win their ninth straight game in this holy war.
But it's been competitive.
It has been competitive. It's been a lot of close games, essentially. Almost decided in that fourth quarter. So that's something that it'll be fun to watch in this one. And I think it's indicative of the season in general. The fact that we're being able to open up, one, with an ACC game here. But then out west, we've got the holy war going.
Holy war.
In a week, Texas A&M comes into Clemson and the Aggies. And that matchup was great last year all the way in College Station. We were introduced to Kellen Mond and his ability in that game. And let's talk about Jimbo Fisher and the next step for the Aggies under him in year two.
I think Kellen Mond, because he has a second year under Jimbo Fisher, is going to be a more efficient quarterback. He's going to be a better quarterback. You get used to the terminology. You get used to the expectations. Jimbo Fisher is a very demanding coach on his quarterbacks. So now I think Kellen Mond knows what to expect. He's used to the type of coaching that Jimbo Fisher brings to the team. And I expect these guys to come in here and fight hard against Clemson. I can't wait. I think Aggies, a really sneaky team in the SEC. Keep an eye on Texas A&M.
Sneaky, but boy, that schedule ain't sneaky. You just talked about Clemson. Yeah. They're playing Georgia. They're playing Alabama.
Not to mention the SEC West.
It's going to be brutal. But I tell you what, Kellen Mond's receivers around him a year ago, I mean, that's brutal, bro. Yeah. I mean, I don't understand how you navigate that at all. But their wide receivers last year were kind of young with Buckley, Davis, and Osborne. You know what, Des, they ain't little.
No.
They're all big on the outside. Exactly. And how fast can they replace Travion Williams? He was the workhorse for them. Jason Corbin this year will be a guy that they love and is dynamic, and you saw him make big plays, especially after contact.
Yeah.
So the guys around Mond, if he can raise his level and they raise their level in second year, this offense should be fun.
And remember how many question marks we had about Texas A&M's defense, and then Mike Elko came in, and there was a difference.
It was unbelievable.
There was actually a
same guys.
Defense, right? Same dude.
Same guys,
right.
But a totally different animal. Now, listen, when you play seven overtimes against LSU, it's hard to get stops in that one.
I can't wait to play them at the end of the year again.
It'll be exciting. Fun.
Maybe eight overtimes? You want to go for eight overtimes next time?
No, they changed the rules, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You ain't got to get you got to get out of here and go home. You can't be here.
Okay, all right. Let's talk about a team that all they do is win, especially during the regular season. It's been since, 2016 since UCF has lost a regular season game, and now their starting quarterback is the former Notre Dame quarterback in Brandon Wimbush.
Yeah.
Okay, what are the expectations for him as he takes over under center?
I don't think you're at UCF and say the expectations are anything less than winning it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could even claim a national championship if you want, but
they had
just winning the division.
Disney.
But Brandon Wimbush has shown you flashes of really good things in his career. He's not going to be intimidated by any atmosphere. You saw it.
No doubt.
Dad, remember with Michigan a couple years ago, he won the game for this. I mean, as a starting quarterback, made big-time plays before Ian Book took over.
Yeah.
He's a great runner.
Right.
You've seen Josh Heupel with running quarterbacks be able to really make him pay.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing that's interesting to me is, you know, Mackenzie Milton's not coming back.
No.
Mack broke his ankle. So you're on quarterback number three already to start. So how much do you really want to run him? But at least you got a guy that you know has played some snaps.
You know, when I think about UCF guys, I think about a team that was underrated at one point and played with a chip on their shoulder, and they started to just tweet and send out anything on social media to get their program some attention, and they got the attention. College game day was there a year ago. Everyone was talking about UCF. I wonder now, would they come out with that same chip on their shoulder that they had a year ago before they started to get all of this national attention? So I want to see what type of attitude and what type of spunk they come out with. They had it a year ago,
yeah.
But now they've gotten all this national attention, and Brandon Wimbush, he's Notre Dame's former quarterback there. I want to see if they still come out with that same type of intensity.
I will say this, Mackenzie Milton, because he was in Orlando, we talked a little bit, and he was talking about the quarterback room and just how impressed he is with Brandon Wimbush, and that there is kind of that competitive chip on his shoulder. I mean,
yeah.
He was 9-3 as a starter, remember,
yeah.
And was taken out of that starting role.
Yeah.
And I do wonder if they're going to run him much, though, because like you said,
yeah.
Where do you start,
hey,
Wimbush?
QB power.
That's
his strength.
If he gets nicked, then putting in.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Trevor Lawrence, he's here, but there's some quarterbacks that aren't here. We talk about the carousel that's going around next.
The PlayStation Player Impact Rating is an objective evaluation of everyone at the highest level of college football. For each player, we compare how successful his team is when he's on the field versus when he's off it, accounting for his teammates and opponents using advanced statistical models. Every player on the field gets credit for each play, regardless of whether they touch the ball or make a tackle, and we scale the result by position to get a 0 to 100 rating. The PlayStation Player Impact Rating shows who's excelling on all parts of the field.
You gotta love that. Now it's time for today's PlayStation Player Impact Rating. And one of the big matchups in this week's slate of games is Oregon versus Auburn. And that showdown, that could be in the trenches by themselves.
Well, Davidson's going to win, though.
Yeah.
He's a 98. The other guy's a 97, so obviously he wins.
You don't think it should be played out on the field?
Simple
not
math.
At all?
Simple
mercy.
Math, of
course. People like numbers.
They do, don't they?
Well, either
how
way.
How many stars a guy has and all that, they just...
Exactly.
That's true.
Something to talk about.
Very true.
Either way, fam, we're going to see it all play out on Saturday night, okay? Because there's a Heisman hopeful in Justin Herbert. Yeah, he's the number 11 Oregon are going to square off against Auburn. It's a top 15 matchup from AT&T Stadium. Jerry World will be there Saturday night at 7:30 Eastern. You can watch it on ABC or stream it live on the ESPN app. Here we are in Clemson, South Carolina, as we kick off the season. The Tigers, the defending national champion, they start their year with Georgia Tech. But remember a season ago, we came in with one starting quarterback that didn't get to finish the season. And that's because, remember back in October 15th of 2018, something called the transfer portal opened up. And that changed the game of college football. Kelly Bryant was able to enter his name into the transfer portal. He was able to make his way to Mizzou. And I guarantee you that now he's got a Tiger-sized chip sitting on his shoulder.
Clemson is the hotbed of the quarterback transfer portal. In 2017, Kelly Bryant beat out highly touted Hunter Johnson for QB1 at Clemson. Bryant led the Tigers to the playoff, but got beat badly by Alabama, leaving him vulnerable with the new freshman star on campus, Trevor Lawrence. Meanwhile, Johnson does the math and realizes he's now third on the depth chart. So he hops in the portal and transfers home to Northwestern. Bryant started 2018 a perfect 4-0, but head coach Dabo Swinney still made a change, deciding the future was now for Lawrence. Bryant left the team, entered the portal, went to the SEC, where he'll replace Drew Locke at Missouri, who left Columbia for the NFL.
So just like you've got the transfer portal, that's a carousel. We've got our carousel up here on the set. Mark Rick now joining us to discuss the transfer portal. How about this, Coach? 13 quarterbacks entered the transfer portal and left from one Power 5 school to another. But just in your judgment, how has this affected college football from a coaching standpoint?
What we're talking about is the glamour position quarterback. That's what you hear about the most. But I heard there's like 1,500 kids that put their name in the portal.
Yep.
And when you put your name in the portal, that coach can say,
"You're done.
See you later. God bless you. I hope it works out for you, son." So all these people are like free agents, and there's not enough scholarships for them to even find. So a lot of these kids are losing scholarships because they think the grass is greener and they don't end up with that opportunity.
A fan of the transfer portal or not?
Well, I mean, there's some good to it. There has been some good to it. But, you know, to me, when do you learn to struggle in life? When do you learn to overcome adversity? When do you learn to grow as a person? You know,
on Twitter.
On Twitter. But I will say this. One guy went in the portal, came out of the portal. Yeah. Jaron Williams, quarterback at Miami, was going to go because it wasn't going his way.
Yeah.
Changed his mind because he knew he didn't show his best. Decided to put his nose to the grindstone and work, and he won the job. So, you know, I was just very proud of him for deciding to do that.
Yeah, well, like Coach said, there are some pros and there are some cons. It's still pretty early. It's only been a couple of years, and I think they're still trying to work it out. Anytime you deal with anything involved in the NCAA, they regulate and mandate. It's almost like make it up as you go along. There's no consistency, and that's the biggest problem right now with the transfer portal. The players that they allow to become eligible and the players that they don't allow to become eligible. That's the biggest issue right now.
It's dumb. I hate it. I can't stand it. I mean, it just it bothers me on multiple fronts. Listen. Every kid, I love the grad transfer rule.
Right.
I absolutely love it. I love when you grind it out and you graduate and you have a chance to go somewhere else. You fought and you earned that right to go somewhere else. Dude, you're seeing teams be affected. And listen, it's an individual game, but in the end, this is the greatest team sport there is. Last year, Adrian Martinez gets announced a starter. Guy he's fighting with, boom. He gone, takes off a transfer. He gets hurt, Nebraska season's down the toilet. You saw it this year. Tommy Stevens named the starter at Mississippi State. Thompson, gone. Yeah. And the transfer portal. Teams are getting affected greatly. Yes, kids have the right to do what they want. Yeah. I think every single situation needs to be uniform. If you're going to allow some people to transfer and not get a pound of flesh and not take a year off, then why? What is the difference? Why does some circumstances not equal other circumstances?
But
it drives me nuts.
When I say this, our last two Heisman Trophy winners have been transfers.
Yes, it sat out a year.
They sat out
Both
a year.
Both sat out a year when they went somewhere. You paid a penalty for sitting out and transferring.
Yeah, but still, that's kids can enter the transfer portal.
I'm fine with that. But I'm fine with that. That's pre-transfer
and that's
portal.
It should be a case-by-case basis. Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. So.
Well, and if it becomes total free agency, it's going to be a zoo. You're truly going to have other people recruiting kids from another college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just openly, overtly.
You're not starting? Wait, you come over here.
Yeah, exactly.
You start right now. We're looking for a cornerback.
Exactly. So
you probably
it'll be I think it could become a train wreck. And every time there is a new rule, to your point, Desmond, I think there's these unintended consequences that you don't know what's going to happen. Like, I would say if they would talk to coaches more often when they make decisions, the coach might say, "I'm going to tell you what's going to happen if you do this." Not that we would know everything, but we'll have a pretty good idea what people are going to do to try to navigate or circumvent a rule.
Something tells me it'll balance out eventually. Like, kids
will
realize,
I mean, it'll become the norm.
Coaches, yeah.
Whatever the norm is, you know, everybody will play with it. And there are some teams that'll benefit more than others. Like Miami this particular year was low on scholarships. And to me, if I'm going to transfer somewhere, I'm going to go to a nice destination where Des lives.
You know, palm trees. Good weather.
You live where people want to go on vacation.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. I don't know, Coach. After touching this desk enough times, it might be hot enough here.
It is hot right here.
All right. Let's take a look at your Wendy's weekend watch. And one of the guys that we should be watching is a guy who did transfer, too, from Alabama.
Grad transfer.
Different. Put your finger up.
So different. It's different.
No. I'm with you, David.
Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, Jalen Hurts.
Jalen Hurts.
Okay. Thank you, Coach. Always be with me. Jalen Hurts for the first time, and he's going to square off against Houston. That's not an easy opponent to start out with.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
King, a quarterback.
You got King and Holderson together. It's going to be fun. We'll see some fireworks.
Quarterbacks, too.
And Alabama, they're looking to bounce back from a loss in the national championship. Their first game will be against Duke. And, of course, you can watch all of those games right there on ABC. All right, we got plenty more coming your way on College Football Live. Jeff Collins, for the first time, we're not going to see the triple option in Atlanta. You're going to hear it from the coach himself. All right, we'll see you Saturday for College Game Day in Fort Worth. And coming up here in Death Valley, it's Georgia Tech taking on Clemson. And for the first time in a decade, we're not going to see the triple option out of the Yellow Jackets, and that's because they have a brand new head coach in Jeff Collins. Listen to his plans for the culture in Atlanta.
I'm from Atlanta. I love Atlanta. When I grew up, we're in the top 10 every year. We're playing in New Year's Day bowl games. We're competing for ACC championships. That's the Georgia Tech that I know and love, and we're restoring that every single day to get us back to that level.
Chains up!
Game.
Chains up!
Game.
Lock in and get to work, all right?
The guys that had great performances yesterday, Dante Smith, give him three. Really good, Dante. TD, give him three. In critical situations, people don't rise to the occasion. They fall to the level of their training. You are being trained at an elite level to be an elite program. Having known about this job and knowing what this place is about, when I interviewed for the job, I told them the two things that have to be fixed first are the culture and the brand. And so we've attacked that relentlessly every single day.
Since Jeff Collins' arrival in Midtown Atlanta, change has come fast and furious for the Georgia Tech program. Collins has revamped the strength and nutrition programs, embraced data collection and applied science, and created a number of new staff positions, including a brand manager, tasked with making the team more visible and reflecting the culture of the ATL.
Keep winning all for the city!
Yeah!
All the things that this great city affords, the fun, the excitement, the vibe that is this great city. But when you look also, 11 of the last 13 national championships in college football have come from within 5 hours of right here on campus. These are your words, what you want people to see when they watch us play. Well, today we got the cameras here. They're going to see how we work, and it should be real. We're either talking about it or we actually doing it. Who are we?
1, 2, 3.
Wreck-em drill's coming, Cooksy.
Yeah.
Wreck-em drill's coming, Tyler. Ready? Attack! Attack! Attack!
As much as Collins emphasizes fixing the culture and brand of the program, he must first balance the offense. For 11 years under Paul Johnson, Georgia Tech ran the triple option and led the ACC in rushing every season. But the Jackets were also in the bottom two in passing each year, a challenge that offensive coordinator Dave Patenaude must address every day.
Of all the coaching changes that occurred this offseason, you could make the argument that the single greatest challenge is going to be yours here at Georgia Tech.
Well, don't put any pressure on us offensively. I appreciate that. The biggest challenge is just trying to find where all the pieces fit together.
So we inherited a roster that had 13 running backs on scholarship and had zero tight ends on scholarship. So we've just been really creative, trying to figure out what our guys can do. We are not a scheme-based program. We are a players-based program. Regardless of what offense we're running, if it's not based on what players you have, then it's not going to be effective.
It's a new time. It's an explosive offense. It's a fun offense to play in. If you're a skill guy, you're going to be put in situations where you're able to make plays.
Hey, triple flip which way?
Right, left, right.
Right, left, right. Pretty good crowd for a practice.
Everything that we do is for this city to make Atlanta stand out. This place is a sleeping giant, is ready to be woken up.
Kings!
Yeah.
Kings!
Yeah.
Kings!
Yeah.
1, 2, 3!
I saw energy, I saw a new scheme, and I saw young Jeezy, so I'm all in with Jeff Collins as well.
Hey, you know what I saw?
What?
I saw a tight end.
Yeah, there was a tight end.
That ain't normal. That ain't normal.
All right, Coach, so you have some experience like Jeff Collins. Okay, 15 wins over two seasons at Temple, three times nominated for the Broyles Award. A lot of experience, right? But you take over a program like Georgia Tech, and you're trying to make a difference. What is the first thing you have to implement? What do you have to change?
Well, there's so many things that need to be done, but I think the first thing is to take ownership of every single player on that team. Mm-hmm. They got to know that you're my guys. You're not the last guys guys.
Right.
You're mine.
Guys.
You're mine.
Right.
You know, and I think they need to know. You need buy-in from your team. You need it especially from your seniors. You want your seniors not to think that, well, we don't care about you. We're just playing for the future.
Yeah.
They got to know that. And I think usually there's a defining moment that happens in the field of battle that kind of validates you as a coach and a staff and even as a program. And I'll go back to the Georgia days when I first got to Georgia.
Georgia-Tennessee?
You know, well, yeah, it was Georgia-Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, when you first become a coach, you recruit till signing date February, and then the first thing you do is what? We did off-season program.
Yep.
Mat drills.
Mat drills.
So we do our mat drills. Mat drills, you know, one of the disciplines of mat drills, you always, we had a finish line for everything. You always finish the drill. Finish the drill. That's all we talked about. And if one guy screwed up, 10 guys had to go back.
Oui.
So it was a great way to build team through adversity. All right, then we go, it's about, we lost our first SEC game to Auburn, I think.
Yep.
Close game. But we go to Tennessee for the first away game in the SEC. And Tennessee, that was the team that, if they beat LSU, they're playing for the national championship against Nebraska.
Haynesworth, so Henderson.
Really, they're a great
grown-ups.
Great team. So we roll in there and somehow find a way to win in the last seconds of the game. And we get in the locker room, and I'm kind of stumbling around saying, you know, we did this and we did that. And then somebody jumped and said, Coach, we finished the drill. And I'm like, you're right. You know, and that kind of became our mantra. And it gave us the street credibility, so to speak, with the fans. And even with your own, as a head coach with your own coaching staff, they're like, maybe Coach has some idea what he's doing. You know? You need that moment.
And I think it's important. Coach talked about it from a coaching perspective. Players, because I remember being in that locker room when Coach Rick came in, and I came in his class, but there was all those guys that were there in the other class, and they're like, wait a minute, we're doing this different. I don't like it. We're working harder. He's asking us to do X, and we haven't been asked to do X, and I don't like it. And so there starts to be a little bit of a division, and you need that defining moment of everybody seeing the same vision and going, this is what's best for us. And then that buy-in. So if it's a close.
It's worth the pain.
By the way, a close game here would be solid. A close first half would be solid, because you're talking about learning that these kids are going to speak French out here on the field from what they just did. They used to speak English, triple option.
Right.
Now they're speaking French, trying to play like real football, not
play
the 150th anniversary. So it's tough. So
he has to change the culture. Huh? That's the first thing he has to do. He needs to get a strength and conditioning coach that understands his offensive and defensive philosophies and will train the players accordingly. Because these guys were brought in to run a triple option offense. That means you're going to have some people movers up front. You're going to have a lot of running backs and wideouts who primarily are blockers. Now you're changing that whole philosophy. Training has to change, too. You're going to have to get some offensive linemen who are a little bit more nimble now because you're going to a spread offense. You're going to have to get a lot of wideouts. You're not playing just two or three. You may play four or five wideouts. So he's in a situation where he needs to change a culture. Coach is right. Dave is right. You got to get everybody to buy in. You got to get the seniors to think, hey, you're not just that regime's guys or players. Now you're our players. And that's tough, too.
Right.
That's really tough to do, especially right out the gate.
Oh, yeah.
And these guys got to buy into the philosophy now of what you want to do on offense and what you want to do on defense. You got to get them excited about it.
Oh, yeah.
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 No
it
doubt.
Looks like he's generating some excitement in Atlanta. Yeah. For the first time in 11 years, it won't be Paul Johnson on the sideline. It'll be Jeff Collins' team. And, Coach, on the other sideline, Clemson, you're coming off a national championship win. And you're looking to win another national title, and you come in as the number one team in the nation.
Right.
You've had experience with back-to-back national titles. What's required of a team to come back from a title?
Well, national title game, didn't win it. But I think what's going to happen is Clemson is going to do the right things. They've got the right personnel. They're going to be very, very difficult to beat.
Who's
you
that
know
guy?
What? When you don't win,
look
there
at
you
that
go.
Young guy. Young
cat there
right
he
there.
Is.
Hey!
When you don't win the national championship, everybody else, they get just a little bit hungrier. And the hungrier you are, the harder you work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to work as hard as the hungry dog, so to speak. Jake Gaither used to say that.
Yeah.
And so there's going to be some hungry dogs trying to get their title.
Mm-hmm. I will say this. It's a lot of new pieces, too, for Clemson. Like, it's not all the same guys. So not everyone has the experience of playing in the national championship game, being a guy that's a starter. So maybe that's something that also fuels a fire, too, when you step on this field.
I think, to me, more than anything, it's leadership.
Mm-hmm.
They have to find their lead. Christian Wilkins is one of the best leaders I've ever been around.
Yeah, he was great.
He was unbelievable and understood that. You had guys like Farrell, the same thing off the edge, that productive guys that are great players that knew how to lead. And here's the thing. Trevor Lawrence is a quiet kid. He's not a
he's not a loud in your face kind of guy, so he's going to have to take more leadership. Yeah. And so every team is so uniquely different when it comes to that, and who's the voice in the locker room that's not going to let me slack off. And they're going to have to find that throughout the season.
I think that when you look at this team, I was here this summer. I brought my kids here and my son was here for Dabo's football camp. And I was able to talk to some coaches and talk to some players because everyone works Dabo's camp. And the one thing that I heard these players say that I really liked, actually I loved it, they said, we police ourselves. Any championship team I've ever been around, you can talk about the coaches, you can talk about the assistant coaches, even the strength and conditioning coaches. But it all comes down to the players who are together more than anybody. Yep. We're together in the dining hall. We're together in the locker room. We're together on campus.
In the club.
These guys police themselves because they're all in. So I think they still have enough veteran leadership. You don't have to be a senior to be a leader.
Right. Yeah.
You can be a redshirt sophomore to be a leader. But if you've been around the program long enough and you've collected enough W's, then you understand what the standard is and you know how to make sure that stays implemented on and off the field. They're in good hands.
That's the definition of a player-led team. And I've used that term before, a player-led team. And some people are like, well, you just let the players run the place?
No, the players understand the standard.
They understand the standard.
That's right.
They have been taught that. They understand it. They believe in it.
That's right.
They bought in it. And now they're saying, coach, we got it.
Yeah. That's right.
You worry about X's and O's.
Yeah,
you worry about all that scheme stuff. Yeah. And we'll take care of the culture of this team.
And the foundation is set by coaches. It's very intentional.
Dabo does that. Year one, Collins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those coaches have to show them the way.
Exactly.
Those seniors, even though they want to be leaders, they're freshmen in a lot of ways because everything's so brand new to them. They don't know what coach wants.
Right.
So it's hard for them to be that leader other than to say, let's go, let's buy in.
That's right.
But a year from now, the next group will be able to take over if they do it right.
All right. Well, Clemson, they've proven that they can most certainly do it right with their senior dinners, accountability drafts, and also some of those leadership dinners that Dabo talks about in building the foundation here. We'll talk about the foundation in that Pac-12. UCLA and Arizona State. Can anyone unseat Utah? We'll discuss what the potential is out west when we come back. Welcome back to Clemson, South Carolina, where we are spending this college football live because the season begins for the defending national champion Tigers, and they open up against Georgia Tech. That'll be tonight on the ACC Network. But right now we're trying to take in everything that we can about week one of college football. And Maria Taylor, David Pollack, and Desmond Howard here with you. And I want to talk a little bit about that Pac-12, and let's start with UCLA.
A 3-9 season last year, but it started very bad, 0-5, and ended a little bit better, 3-4 to end the season,
right?
I'm always optimistic.
Exactly. Yeah.
So let's talk about year two under Chip Kelly, like, right?
Yeah.
We're going to be looking up as they play Cincinnati.
She said, like, right?
Well, I tell you what, I think it's going to be a big year for him. I think coming out the gate, playing Cincinnati, that's not a game you can take lightly.
Right.
I mean, Luke Fickell, he has this team rolling. They had 11 wins a year ago. I think they've adopted Luke's personality, which is a very physical personality. They're going to come out there and hit the Bruins in the mouth. 3-9 is not what we expected. I don't care if the cupboard was bare, just from a Chip Kelly team. So this is going to be a big opening game for Chip Kelly and the UCLA Bruins.
So remember, Chip Kelly opened with these guys last year and lost.
Yeah, exactly.
And took the L. But, listen, when you look at this UCLA team, they're going to have to get better. And last year, Joshua Kelly was their workhorse. He didn't do anything against Cincinnati. Quarterback play, Chip Kelly, all those guys, all those years.
Yep.
I wonder what the quarterback system looks like and if they can get that going. And I'm telling you, he doesn't get talked about a lot. But if you go to Cincinnati and you look at Michael Warren II, that dude's an animal.
Yeah.
He's an absolute animal. Almost, 19 touchdowns last year? I think something crazy like that. He's physical, small to the ground. He's a powerful running back that can give everybody problems.
Well, for UCLA, it'll likely be Dorian Thompson-Robinson that gets that starting nod. He's on top of the depth chart right now.
And healthy.
Chip Kelly, he's healthy, so maybe that's a good sign going into game one against Cincinnati. Another Pac-12 team we'll be watching with year two underneath their head coach will be Herm Edwards in Arizona State. What are we expecting to see out of Herm, the Sun Devils, after they shocked the world? I mean, 7 wins last season, finished second in the Pac-12 South.
Yep.
That was above expectations.
Way above.
Can you meet them and get ahead of them again?
Yeah. I tell you what, I was so impressed with Herm's team a year ago. I went out there and visited with the crew. He has a great supporting coaching staff. Herm's an excellent motivator. He had guys handling the X's and O's. They returned 15 starters from a 7-win season a year ago. September 14th, they play Michigan State. That's going to be the game where I can tell exactly what this team is made of in 2019. But I expect them to have at least 8 wins this season.
And beat Michigan State last year.
Yeah, that was the game last year. That was kind of said it.
Well, that was the one early. We were like, wait.
What a minute.
Right.
And again, we were just talking with Coach Rick about buy-in.
Yeah.
When Herm did that last year against Michigan State, the team starts to buy in. This team starts to believe. So it's huge. I agree. I think this is an 8-9, even more win team this season. It could be a formidable one.
All right. Before we go to break, do you guys have any thoughts on the best college football stadiums? The Big House and Sanford Stadium don't count. Choose one.
That's it. You know what?
What?
Death Valley.
The Rose Bowl.
The Rose? Oh, that was a good one.
Yeah.
Death Valley LSU is pretty disgusting.
The Rose Bowl.
Okay, we'll hear from the expert.
No better than the Rose Bowl.
I got no excuses. Yeah.
I've been to 453 colleges. I've probably ran over 100 football stadiums.
At the Citadel, home of the Bulldogs.
As long as there's no signs saying do not enter, I'll walk around the whole stadium until I find a little nook and cranny. I'm like, I guess it's open.
Running the field, running the field.
My goal is hit all the FBS schools. It got kind of an addiction. I have to spend my vacations going to college campuses.
North Greenville University, Tigerville.
Every school you visit has some unique aspect of it.
College, Bailey Memorial Stadium, the Blue Hose.
I scored at least a touchdown on every field I ran. I do my little touchdown dance.
Cut a pass.
My frame is 5'2", about 110 pounds. I'm not going to be a football player, but I probably scored the most touchdowns in America, maybe.
Touchdown! Yay!
Touchdown, Barry!
I want to know how many times.
I want to know how many times
Barry's been arrested for trespassing.
He said if the door is unlocked, he's just going to walk in and do it.
What about when it says "do not enter"?
You do it anyway. You do what you want.
I'm just telling you. You go run on the field like this right anytime soon, and you're going to get yourself in handcuffs.
Okay. What's cool about that is it's Barry's story, and it's a 150th season of college football. So we're going to see a bunch of those stories throughout the year. Do you guys have one that you can tell real quick? Give me your college football story.
You got one, Des?
I don't have one I can tell real quick.
You want the hype?
I don't have one I can tell.
So, I mean, that's like the obvious.
And he don't want to sit there and talk about his own Heisman story.
I don't have like a Barry's story was really interesting.
I just think it's funny to look back as you've gotten older and you realize what coaches were doing. Like Coach Rick being up here kind of takes you down memory lane. I had coaches literally, I remember before games, Des would be like, I don't think you should play defensive end on this side, on the right side, because Sean Andrews might kill you.
Really?
And I'm like, bro, you don't believe in me? And they're like, nah, I think you should play the other side. And I'm just getting amped up. Like, the motivation, you look back on some of the things they said to you, and you're like, dang, he was just pushing my buttons, man. Now you get it.
Well, I'm going to look back at this moment. We're starting another season together. Hi, friend.
Hey, Gino, you were awesome.
Let's go. College Football Live, let's go.